Next, I guess we get, is this SMPNG now?
Yeah.
John is going to tell us about SMPNG, and then we're going to ask some questions. Oh, you can draw pictures?
No, I'm going to draw pictures, so I'll go to where people sit.
Okay. I actually attempted to organize a mock while I was here at the conference, and so mostly I'd just like to go over what we talked about as that, if anybody has any questions. The biggest topic of discussion at this talk was realistically, what do we want to have, what do we actually realistically expect to have done by the time the by vote comes out in November? And I'm taking a very conservative viewpoint considering the amount of work, the amount of work that I have been able to get done this far, and the amount of work that other people have been able to get done this far. And we basically worked up a little list of things we'd like to get done for Vivo, which I also talked about with Robert and Murray yesterday during a little list engineering meeting. I have a couple of trees I'd like to get committed very soon that are sitting in proof right now, but just need more testing. The first one is to overhaul the credentials for processes to go to start using the per-thread UCred reference everywhere, and that changes a couple of APIs such as the PKIN-C and PKIN-SCED and all those, and the S-user API a little bit. And once I have that done, I would like to finish another small branch, which is to make K-trace do all its work in an asynchronous kernel thread where you get, when you actually do K-trace, you just send these little work items kind of in a queue that the asynchronous thread processes for you, so that you don't have to, basically calling K-trace does a lot of things like call down into VFS, and that can be unfortunate in many cases and cause lots of locking problems. So this allows us to not have to worry about when we call K-trace having to deal with all the locking issues of going down into VFS and whatnot.
This makes K-trace much faster.
Well, yeah, it should make K-trace relatively faster, except that your K-trace thread now has to run. The other thing that I would like to get done by 5.0, the only big thing I would like to get done by 5.0 is the networking stack, because it is relatively disconnected from much of the rest of the kernel, and it's also something that is used in a lot of FreeBSD's target market, like in web servers and so forth, and I think would be the biggest net gain of the various subsystems we could pick to try to get done for 5.0. There was a pretty good amount of discussion about that. Most of it centered around seeing how much performance we could get by just trying to lock sockets and pipes. And then when you get down deep enough in the socket layer, you may have to acquire a giant, but at least that would help with many common operations, you would hope.
Do you have questions now, or am I at the very end?
I'll just wait till the end. It's easier that way. The other suggestion brought up was to, if someone feels brave enough, to attempt to trace down the VOP read and write paths to these special cases where the memory is already resident and see if you can push down giant into that. Personally, I'm not going to do that, but if somebody's really wanting to try to do that, they can attempt it.
I'll wait for you.
I was thinking of you when I suggested it, Matt.
Chris and I are pushing down from the file descriptor level, so we will hit that.
And I guess the only other thing that I would like to get in by 5.0 is I would like to make the kernel fully preemptible, which the only thing standing in the way is fixing some bugs with IPIs and some bugs from the alpha stuff. And that's, if you may have questions now, I can take them.
I suppose my big question is, where's the architectural overview for SMB?
I'm actually working on a document.
Yeah, I saw a draft of that. Okay. Second question, what's happened to lightweight interrupts?
If you want to interrupt them on an architecture, go for it. However, preemption gives us most of the gain of lightweight interrupt thread switches.
Have you measured this?
When we turned preemption on, it was a very noticeable improvement. And we've had it off in the alpha, and turning on alpha is a very noticeable.
I'm sure the preemption would improve it, the situation we've got now. I suppose my whole concern about the SMP project is we had some architectural goals which we'd established nearly 2 years ago as being the most important things to do. And some of them haven't happened. Now, it could be that we're wrong here, but if we are wrong, we need to know why we were wrong. And somehow I'm seeing it took some 8 years with a whole lot of engineers to get halfway reasonable SMT performance, and they did a lot of planning. I'm just a little bit worried that the planning isn't enough.
Maybe they did too much.
Maybe they did. That's a valid thing. I think
it's arguable that they've done some of the planning for us, which is what they guess, right?
But we haven't seemed to pay much attention to what they're doing.
It's actually come down to, Bob is working on this part, but on
the road.
So then Joe walked away. And the fact of the matter is how it's always been, some of them said they're going to do something and they just take too long to do it, or, so it's really, who's ever got it first and actually has it working, should just go ahead and do something like that. Like, honestly, with the lightweight inner thread, Bosco, I can't pronounce the last name properly.
Relax.
Okay, there's a point to be made there, though, that we, before we started doing this SMP stuff, I made this claim, which I never was able to substantiate, of course, that the SMP project was too big for our traditional approach to work on.
It's pretty close to too big.
And
then we can go to you.
So it was really good when BSDI came and dumped all this code in our lap. Now, sure, the BSDI code needed improvement, but they had some basic architectural premises which we decided were good, but we haven't fulfilled a lot of them. And just pushing the locks down and little detailed stuff there is what everybody's been doing. What makes our approach better?
Pushing the locks down is actually the biggest. Right now, it's the biggest bang for the buck.
It's sure, but that's what everybody does.
What's wrong with that?
Well, the fact is that nobody's getting really good scalable SMT performance.
We are not trying to run through this thing on a 1024 CPU system. I don't think that's reasonable. I think a more reasonable goal is somewhere in the range of 4 to 8 CPUs top, probably.
But that is probably not good enough.
Look at the number of machines that people who run through this thing have. How many people do you think have UP machines? How many have 2-processor or 4-processor? I mean, anybody running previously on a more than 8 CPU system?
Okay, there are two reasons for that, of course. One is it's not worth it. The other one is, of course, that if we take that particular argument all the way, we say, okay, most machines in UP, we don't need SMP.
It's not that we don't need SMP, but I don't think we need a target for a 64 CPU system. We just bought an 8 CPU.
This is a bike set, because the unavailability of hardware means that even if we felt having 64 CPU support is good, we wouldn't be able to get the hardware to actually do it.
Not everything that looks like a bike set is a bike set.
SMP. Can we move
on? So actually, I think we should move on. I think this is not a profitable discussion right now.
I think this is a very important discussion. We should. I personally think we're going to fail unless we come up with a good architectural background.
Peter has had it.
I just wanted to comment. You mentioned the pipe thing. The moment you get into valves, the pipe system you fairly fair and square right into VM page management.
We were talking about the non-VM part of
that. The pipe example wasn't a particularly good one because you run smack into VM, so.
You should come to the bar so you can help contribute what other people have to do.
The real fact of the matter is you can't do Unix for magic.
David's been waiting a while, actually. He has.
What's missing here, I think, is you told us three things you'd like to accomplish for 5.0, but I've been working with you and around you for a good year listening about this. You've always been very microscopic. How about right now you tell us the big picture? What is it that we wanted to accomplish a year ago? What have you really accomplished? What is, from the high level, what do you think will be accomplished by 5.0? What does the three patches of yours accomplish? The general person thinks, and even some committers that should be a little more clued in, think come 5.0 we're having fine-grained SMT. It's done. It's complete. And I know that's not the case.
The entire direction that I've seen that has been given is that we want a fine-grained locked kernel with no further clarification.
Okay.
That's all the entire goal that I've had to work on since this project was initiated at a meeting I did not even attend.
Yes.
Well, I think there are some specifics that we had, which is a full of
other ways.
Hey.
Don't interrupt them.
Actually, it's falling in.
Yeah, I would like to answer Greg a bit of the way, and that is, I'm sure we can come up with an architectural overview. I think before we propose we do that, you should go down in the shared doc papers and look at the architecture paper for 4BSD And you'll notice how little of that actually ever conspires to become reality. There's a reason for that. I think I'm not saying that we couldn't do with some better communication, some better documentation, all these stuff. There's tons of stuff we can improve. But I don't believe we can make a roadmap that will take us to SMP and G.
We had a roadmap. I'd like to know why we left
no,
it.
No, I don't think we had a roadmap.
We did. We didn't have
much of a roadmap. If you think back to the keynote we had here, what we had was a rough idea that the mountain was in that direction, and we wanted to hit the highest one.
We had specific.
And we wanted to avoid some particular holes and canyons we've seen other people fall into. But we certainly didn't have anywhere close to your average gas station map where you can drive straight over there. And we'll never have that.
I think it's important
to realize that we're not just talking about moving locks around, sticking locks in places. We're talking about some sections of the scope will have to be redone.
Okay, since you're talking about it, I think I'm ready to reply.
I have a very specific question for you. What key milestones can you name of things that we are not pursuing?
The lightweight grids.
It's already done. But it's already done, and it's an optimization.
Is there anything else?
Okay, tell me how they've been done. This didn't come out of the whole
They're
thing.
They're implemented on Spark 64 almost. Bosco has been working on the unit processor, but I don't think FTP yet.
Without going through the scheduler.
Hmm?
Without going through the scheduler.
Yes. Well, you have to go through some part of the scheduler, but not much of it.
No, you don't. The original implementation didn't go through part of the scheduler.
And you have to set Kurt thread. That is part of the scheduler. That is not something you need a lock, and it's under a sched lock.
The Spark implementation, not the Intel implementation, had about a 5 instruction overhead.
At the SMPNG meeting, I think what the general consensus was that we had to come up with a framework for how we're going to do SMP.
Yeah.
And we weren't going to worry about the optimization. And the lightweight thread switching, if it comes in 5.0, that's great. But what's 5.0? 5.0 is the framework for doing an SMP implementation. Maybe we'll only scale to 2 CPUs at 5.0. Maybe only 4. Maybe in a decade from now, it'll scale to something larger. Because the report there.
The report made specific statements, and we haven't reached most of them.
Well, why was it that we didn't do a lightweight thread scheduler first?
They
told us it was the biggest mistake that they made, and if they had to do it over again, they would not do it until the very last step.
Exactly.
That's what the roadmap said. Heavyweight first, then lightweight, and we were planning to do lightweight a year ago.
Can you come up with something very specific that it is what you're asking for? If people stopped interrupting me,
I'd tell you in great detail.
Well, you could ask for take your hand up like everybody else.
Well, I was talking and I was interrupted, and I was told to shut up. But
I didn't listen. We are off the rails. Can we get back to O'Brien's question, please?
All right. Can you repeat it, please?
Okay, I guess so the first part was, where is it we thought in general we wanted to head? In general, you answered that part.
Yes.
Now, what is it that you've accomplished from a high level? Don't say I've got to suggest that exactly does blah, 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 blah. What is it we have accomplished? What are your next 3 commits going to accomplish, which I assume is what you hope to get done by 500?
Well, the networking stuff is not a pending commit. That has not been done. From a high level perspective, almost all the work I've done so far has been infrastructure. When BS2S did their SMP stuff, they added new Texas, and they changed their TSleep functionality and their APIs to support new Texas, rather than new condition variables. And instead of doing their own spider lock implementation, which Chuck wanted them to do, they've been using Lock Manager one. We've taken a
now attending
Bosco Montreal.
Hi Bosco.
Hi guys. Yeah, I just I'm just listening to this streaming, just to clear up the lightweight interrupt stuff for x86. Basically, the way it's done is just really quickly. We just switch context. It's very similar to BSDOS, so it's very minimal. It has a very minimal impact on the scheduler itself. The scheduling is done very simply, and I mean the code's available. It's been available for a while now in the interrupt perforce repo. So yeah. So I guess. Whatever. I mean, I don't know if you guys have looked at it or if Paul has looked at it. I mean, I heard a little
Jacob
bit of
looked at it.
I've looked at it.
Okay,
question, Bosco. Are you following the way that BSDOS did it on Intel or on Spark?
Well, I did it for Intel, so I followed the way they did it for Intel. However, I mean, I didn't go through the whole generating code on the fly thing.
That's good. Yeah. However, that's what BSDOS calls heavyweight interrupts, as opposed to what they had on the Spark, which they called lightweight.
What BSDOS did with the lightweight stuff is they just generated the code on the fly for some ambiguous reasons. I mean, I couldn't figure out myself. I think it had to do with some things not being supported by their compiler at the time.
I think so they probably had a CPP heavy there, and he liked doing it.
Okay, let's move back to what John was saying about the current status.
Okay. So part of the changes, we've taken this approach, I guess one of the reasons I personally like to work on open source is I like to do things right rather than always do things in the most expedient fashion possible. I'd rather avoid quick hacks. So that's why we've taken a little more time to get the infrastructure more formalized. So we have multiple primitives that are typically used in primitive programming so that programmers who are used to writing primitive applications can use things like semaphores, condition variables, mutexes, and read or write locks like they are used to. We're also, one of the big things I've been trying to get working since Unix was making the kernel fully preemptible down in the scheduler itself rather than it being a hack just in the cases when an interrupt happens and just in the cases when we release a mutex. But that actually every time we put a new thread on the run queue, we will make a decision whether or not to preempt right then and there, or to delay it until later, which is what the preemption branch is about. And I've actually committed about half of that original code into current right now when I got rid of the mutex and the switch flag, for example, which was that, and the SWI and the switch flags, which were hacks that were supposed to only be used when you knew you were in a critical section and weren't supposed to do a switch, instead of having the kernel automatically figured out like it does now. The K-trace is another infrastructure thing. Because of the locking problems I've introduced, before I went down pushing locks everywhere, I wanted to get things like K-trace fixed so that it's feasible to push down locks. So that's another small thing that will allow us to take giant back out of user ret around signal handling, for example, when I can get that K-trace thing done. That was the motivation for it.
So can I summarize the stuff in two things that has been accomplished or will be by 5.0? One, general framework, which includes mutexes, other kind of locks, the fact that we've got some debugging macros. Two, in order to test your theory of is the infrastructure sufficient and good, and to test the infrastructure, you've been locking the proc structure as the one key example, as the one kind of test case.
There's two reasons for that.
However, the infrastructure is probably in place as much as you know should be in place by 5.0.
I would hope so.
The proc lock will be partially pushed down, not near fully, probably is not buying us any performance or anything really, isn't really buying us much in the SAT case.
It will help a little bit when I get this next one in, but not right now, it's not.
So for 5.0, we're still not talking about fine-grained, super-strong SMP. It's really our system infrastructure so others can...
That's why I want to get the networking stack done, because I think that is the one thing we can try to get done that will give us the most bang for the buck.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it should be noted that we have other pieces of code which aren't ready to be picked out from under Giant. DevFS was written to be not need Giant, and the Yum stuff will not need Giant either. So these places can be picked out. I don't know how much performance that will get. DevFS, probably nothing. the Yum stuff will probably give us a tiny bit, in particular in complex cases with rate code, you'd be able to take one CPU and the Paris calculation. But we have various pieces of code in the tree which can be taken out and will be taken out essentially before 5.0. One of the things which you look at is probably to have a per file system or maybe per mount point ability to take a file system or mount point out on the Giant thing. DevFS and ProcFS doesn't need Giant, whereas UFS still does, or something to that effect.
The problem is that some of the VFS locking is wrong or doesn't work and things like that. There's going to be a lot of work to do.
Which particular kind of VFS locking do we need here? We have several.
The vNode locking.
But it's not like it's only John who's working on getting us out from under Giant. And I think that's one of the things that we should probably get to the point at here is where people can start taking their favorite pieces of code and say, what can I do?
Audio is a good example. Yeah, that's sounds different and MP safe and things like that now.
Matt's had a pen up for one, sorry.
Just as an example of what we'll probably be able to do fairly soon is now that Alfred has got the file descriptor locking, the next step is the FSR. in a file. And for things like pipes and certain devices in DevNull, DevZero, I think we will be able to get giant out from under those in fairly short order. The V is because basically because they haven't hit any DFS.
Now departing.
Bosco, Montreal.
DFS ops would be harder and easier at the same time, though, because they had to deal with log manager locks for a long time. But I think that the IO paths that we have to concentrate on the most in terms of DFS ops are going to be read and write. And the others, if they don't make, if we can't fine grain the others in 5.0, well, it's not a big deal. So read and write are what we will want to focus on.
Two quick questions. One is, what specifically are you planning in terms of performance gains before the release is cut? I know it's a touchy question, but... And then the other question is, do we have any more firm of a schedule in terms of what will happen before the release? So is there a code freeze plan that will allow, like, a couple months of polish before the actual release?
The second subject is something for the 5.0 release talk. That will come at the end.
Yeah, hold off on that.
Okay.
No problem.
The first one, my goal would be to have no more than a 10% performance decrease for 5.0, to be honest.
Versus the stable branch.
And when you turn all the debugging off, which means there's not only witness and variance and stuff, but also like the malloc debugging and other things which can slow things down.
So the goal is actually for usable system for most purposes.
I would still use 4X for quite a while in production if you really need performance.
So you'll have a 10% degradation with
the device. That's worst case.
Worst
right.
case.
No,
worst.
Right.
If it's better
well,
than that, we won't
10%
mind.
Degradation. I mean,
well, that was sort of my question.
Okay.
So is that 10% on a single processor or multi-processor?
No.
The first thing I want to do before I commit too much to numbers is I want to actually run some real good tests with all the debugging and stuff turned out to see where we are right now, which I haven't done.
Okay.
Because I always run my machines with all the debugging crap turned on, so there's dog slow, and I don't know, you know, if the dog slow is current slow, if the dog slow is all the stuff turned on.
And the follow-up question is there one benchmark you had in mind as a touchstone, or
I'm open to lots of ideas because my usual thing that I do to test everything is the build wall. Build wall is a pretty subjective test. So.
One thing is, if we have this performance goal, what if we don't meet it badly? Like performance 5.0 is much, much worse than data.
Well, then we can revisit the question of whether or not we should be releasing 5.0, although I would really hate to put it off any further. But
yeah,
we can't meet our goals, and we need to look at
worse than 4.8?
Sorry?
Are we going to have worse SSD performance than 4.8?
Yeah. Probably.
No, I don't think so.
Well, we don't know. Why don't we
just
do that? One of the fundamental problems with the 4.0x model is that when one processor is in the kernel, and a timer goes off on it, the difference is you can block that entire CPU. And now that means you actually perform it.
Yeah, we'll be able to run change user process on CPU A while the CPU B is internal.
Yes, that is. Yes,
so I don't think
that
it would be worse than 4.8.
I think it'll depend on what your application does.
I'm
sure there's corner cases where it will be true, but for your average dual CPU box, which does some network, maybe some IO, disk IO, I don't think we'll see worse performance.
Well, there is a problem if you are in the kernel right now in 4X and one CPU and you are in STL net or something and you get a bio interrupt, you can go handle it. And right now, if you are anywhere in the kernel just about in 5X and you get interrupt, the interrupt means giant, you have giant, and that waits until you get out of the kernel. So actually, interrupt handlers are actually blocked in more of the kernel than they are in 4X, even on SMT systems.
Well, you're running STL file.
Right.
One of the questions that
so I think it will still stop.
Unless we can get some of the crucial device drivers out from under kernel, or under giant.
Excuse me, John?
Yeah.
I mean, getting the disk drivers out would be a big step.
Yeah, I was
going
to
ask.
Just want to add something. Sorry, just quickly. There's talk about the lazy, doing the lazy context switches on the interrupt handlers thing. It doesn't bias anything until those interrupt handlers can run without giant. So implementing the lazy interrupt handling does not gain us very much at all at this point. Because
that's the second thing.
Because the very first thing it'll do is I'll hit giant. So But then we take a heavyweight switch anyway. So
if I decouple the device drivers from the VM and the VFS system with the ARM, I can't see that it would be very much work in getting the disk drivers to use to get rid of Giant in the interrupt routine.
Yes,
then we're actually moving somewhere, we're getting parallelism.
What we could do, for example, is turn the SPLs into individual mutexes. That wouldn't be ideal, but it would be better than what we have now.
If you actually go down and look what the SPLs do, they pretty much end up to SPL practically anything on generic anyway on 4.x. Because the flip and the PPP pulls the TPY and the net map together.
And that's correct, but
the difference between running an SPL high all the time and running 4.x is not that different once you get down to it.
I would say that at the beginning, if we make individual mutexes out of them and then find what conflicts remain.
Okay, there's the problem with that is that a lot of the user land side, not the user land side of the kernel, but the process entry into the kernel side assumes mutual exclusion. So the SPL only has one interrupt contact. So you can't actually multi thread the system call path.
That's what we're talking about.
Turning SPLs into mutexes doesn't bias much,
Alfred's point is that with an SMP system, you don't have to just protect against the interrupt turn off underneath you, but if another CPU is making a system call, it can be corrupted dash right, because the SPLs don't protect. The system calls UP kernel is not preemptible and it's safe, and if the interrupt doesn't touch that data, it's safe for us to not worry about it. Whereas an SMP kernel, we now have shared data that can get toasted. So SPLs, if mutexes, you still have to have Giant.
But if we go backwards a bit, what we're talking about here is getting more people more involved in SMP and G. And yep. I hate to say this, but I'm not still quite sure I have the document I will turn to when I need to figure out what the right locking thing to do at this particular place is. I have various pieces of bits and emails I've saved and stuff like that, but it would really be nice to have a flip note to what kind of locking construction we use and where we use them.
Consider my paper an abridged version of something that I need to work on more.
Your paper is already on my my hit list.
A lot more work.
My question is, do you need to work on it, or is this one of the places where we could reach out in the project and say, we need somebody who can do something with words to help this guy out?
I am a documenter.
Are you doing too much, John?
John?
Oh. Sorry, I'm behind. Call out. I will be happy to help you with words.
Okay, thanks.
I was going to note that it's a BOP I had signed up to do the locking for the
NewBus. Yes.
So it's not just John doing the locking, but locking for NewBus is not going to help our performance.
Well, one of the other things we've talked about, there are a couple of lightweight things we talked about doing. For example, System 5 semaphore interface for applications that use semaphores, that should be no trouble at all to lock. The pipe part, apart from the VM stuff, the sort of the simple pipe version where you're actually copying the data as opposed to VM, that should be really easy to lock. And there are a number of other low-hanging fruit. So if people want low-hanging fruit, I think we can find some.
A couple of things. First of all, I'll help with documentation. If you need help with sort of like kind of that sort of thing. But the reason why I want to help is because you said earlier, like, you know, if we hit November and we've got really big problems with SMP and we have to push 5.0 back again, I think that's going to be absolutely disastrous.
I agree.
And we need some people now to sit down and sort of say, like, what is the roadmap? It's sort of a thread that David and Greg both picked up on. We don't really have a roadmap, you know. Do we need to lock down this bit of the kernel because that's part of our target?
We have a must lock list, we have a can, should lock list, and we have a won't lock list.
I don't think people are very
aware
of
that. That's not a published list, and it will be so very soon. It's one of the things we hashed out.
That's part of today's 5.0 release thing.
Yeah. The one thing on the must lock list that isn't currently claimed is some of the network stack related stuff.
But should the network stack be on the must lock list? Because that's a big job. And
it's actually smaller than most other things.
So we'll hear about
can I jump in the middle of it? I'm just going to raise my hand and scream. The network stack is not a small thing to lock down, having done it in an embedded system.
And also system or other big monsters.
Okay, well, there's 100 global variables, right? And there's over 100 global locks. that were all done with mutexes in the system I worked on, and then we had to lock them all down.
But even putting one big lock around the network, a dedicated lock around
instead
the network,
of giant,
would be an improvement.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's
an easy solution. But if you mean really locking it down, which I've done,
that was what I was going to get to, is that even if a 5.0 won't do set the goals to ring fence bits of the system, so we can at least hit 5.0 and say, right, the infrastructure for fine grade lock is in place. We've managed to push giants down at least one level, and performance doesn't suffer really badly.
Well,
I think it'll be conceived as a successful release. If we get too bogged down and sort of like, well, we want to do the network stack, or we work on Nubus, or everybody's going off and doing different things, and there's no plan to say that's what we're going to do, I think we'll get to November and find, as we did last November, we're not there yet, and we have no plan to get ourselves out of
the situation. That's actually one of the reasons I want to do the performance numbers very soon, to see where exactly we stand now, so we can best evaluate how much work we need to do to get to where we want to be.
It's a fairly elementary question you can bonk me on the head for asking. On a uniprocessor machine, the locks are no ops, right? I mean,
I can make spin locks pretty much no ops, and that they will just have to either disable or defer interrupts for a while. So I can make spin locks slightly. Someone not locked, but actually the normal mutexes they need to be locked for calls to block if they're actually tested. For example, if we get an interrupt, and when the interrupt handler comes here and wants to try to run, and it is giant, and the threat interrupt has giant, then there still needs to actually be a lock and block again.
Okay, well the second part of my question really doesn't apply then, because the second part of the question was if locks are basically no ops on the unprocessor machine, then where does the performance degradation come from? But I guess that kind of got short circuited.
Okay.
The thing was, do we care about performance of 5.0 on unicron, or we don't? Because by pushing down locks, of course, what was the single SPL or acquisition of giant now becomes 10 or 20 or 50 lock acquisition.
Well, we don't want to have too many lock acquisitions. That's why I say
since I'm seeing this performance, huge performance degradation on unicron between stable and current on fifth platform.
Well, one thing that this SMPNG may help bias is that right now if you have two network interfaces and you get interrupts on one, if you're an STL net handling on one network interface, you block the other network interface as well, the STL int rather, whichever is appropriate. Whereas at least with this, if you are doing something on one network interface, you can safely get and handle interrupts on another network interface. In your case,
I'm talking about the uniprocessor case. And the point is, whether we care or not about uniprocessor performance on 5.0.
Yeah, that's good. I want that to be in the 10%, no worse than 10% worse range.
Okay. We are not there yet.
Correct.
I think we're kind of aiming squarely for a technical discussion here, aren't we?
Yeah, I think we should
take a break for food.
For KSD, when it's done, isn't that still going to work better on a uniprocessor with fine grain locks, or even on a uniprocessor or something we want?
For threaded apps, which I think will be better. Yeah.
Right, so I'm just reminding people it's not just SMP machines. This is buying us something. It also isn't that so blocks okay. It's null on the UP case. You still need it for KSDs and stuff for threads.
Well, sort of.
Actually, in a unit processor case, KSD degrades down to in a lot of the kernel. KSD threads look identical to R4 processors.
Yeah, but still, on the unit-processor machine, though, if you block an IOCL on a multi-threaded program, your thread will get to run, which it doesn't now.
Yeah. Right, so it's
coming back to something that was asked a little while ago. One thing that I think would be particularly useful would be to have some sort of roadmap on dependency trees. So we list sort of major sys-call groups, something so that these system calls depend on this subsystem being locked, and that subsystem depends on that being locked, and so on, and just so that we have a list that we can look at and know what the bank of bucks we're going to get from blocking some particular subsystem and whether or not we're going to get any benefit from it.
If you're more familiar with anyone else with the architecture of the FreeBSD kernel, if you'd like to work on that would be really cool.
I think we should go to it.
I actually actually think there's a point to what Peter said, but
yeah.
I also agree that probably not very many people can do that.
Yeah. Except Peter. Except Peter.
Okay.
Yeah, well,
we should go to a break at this point and start again in
10 minutes.
10 minutes. 10 minutes.